Welcome back to Relatively Damaged by Damaged Parents. Today we have Liz Green with us. She is the editor and book coach behind Green Goose Writing. She's written 16 books, taught college writing classes, and edited countless manuscripts to help people tell their stories. She works with those who want to write a book to inspire others but are stuck trying to get the words on the page. Through one-on-one coaching and powerful group courses, she helps them finally finish their book and feel proud of sharing their words with the world. You can find her at greengoosewriting.com. Liz, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Angela. I'm looking forward to talking.
Yeah, it's always fun to start these conversations with people. And, you know, there's something special about connecting, even online for just a few, what feels like only a few moments when we talk, that is just so inspiring to me and I believe the listeners too. Like, to walk away from these podcasts, I really feel like I always have more insight and a little more, okay, I can handle the world today.
Mm-hmm. And I find sometimes, you know, I've been listening to the podcast as well, and you get to hear conversations that we don't always have in our everyday lives with the people around us. And it's refreshing and interesting and gives you the chance to think about things in a slightly different way sometimes. So I love being a part of that.
I have to ask you, so now that you've been listening, since I know this, when you look around at the people around you, has it shifted just a little bit? And maybe there's a little more grace or a little more something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a revelation that comes in degrees. I remember, you know, you and I are going to talk about when I got sick. But when I did get sick, I remember going back home to England. I live in Canada. I'm born and raised in England. I remember going back home and scheduled with some old classmates who I hadn't seen in, I don't know, a decade. And before dinner, my mum said to me, "What's wrong? You seem angsty. You seem anxious." And I just burst out in tears. And I said to her, "My life has fallen apart. I can't do anything. I'm sick. I'm not working. I have nothing to show for myself. And I'm going to go see these people. And their lives have gone on and mine's stuck." My mum sat me down and said, "They've got their own stuff going on too, you know. Yes, you've got hard, difficult, unique things going on in your life, but so have they, you know. You're not the only one who might be feeling stressy right now or feeling like you're not showing up the way you want to." And it was such a weight lifted to be like, oh yeah, we're all a little bit damaged, like you say. And so that was my first kind of revelation. And then the more you hear stories like the ones we hear on this podcast, the more you kind of open up to that idea. And it does grant you that extra grace for yourself and for other people. And just makes it feel a little bit lighter, I think, when you can remember that.
Yeah, like the world somehow gets lighter and things aren't as heavy as they used to be, even though the topics are heavy.
Yeah, and it's a little bit messed up maybe to think that there's some lightness in realizing that everyone's dealing with heavy stuff. But I guess it's that kind of camaraderie and that feeling that you're not alone, or that you're not, you know, the freak, the only weird one out there dealing with stuff.
Yeah, even though it feels like it. So even in the midst of that struggle, it just feels lonely. Mm. And I think sometimes hearing the podcast might be helpful, and yet sometimes that loneliness will still sneak in because it's still, and maybe that loneliness is part of that, the journey. I don't know. What was your experience like in your journey with that sense of I'm alone?
That's a really interesting question, because looking back, I can see that when I got sick, and I eventually went off work on sick leave, or even prior to that, I did feel very alone because my colleagues didn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand what was going on, so I couldn't help them understand. And then I went off sick and I was literally alone in my house in the day. And I didn't recognize it for what it was because I was so wrapped up in the moment. And I think that's what happens often when you're going through some kind of trauma, whatever it may be. You're in survival mode, you're just focusing on the moment, and you don't maybe notice, oh, this is loneliness. I'm lonely. I need to, the antidote is to connect with others. And you, maybe you don't even have the energy to do that, even if you did realize it. So yeah, there was a lot of loneliness for me, but I didn't notice it for what it was at the time. And it was only as I started to kind of shore myself up in other areas, you know, work on my health, work on my energy, on my, you know, emotional, you know, not being so damn depressed, that I started to have the ability to pay attention and to notice that loneliness and to work on it.
Mm-hmm. So what I heard you say is that in a lot of ways, it took going down these other roads of health and wellness that then you were able to identify, oh, this was loneliness, and then do something about it. But it wasn't like you could recognize that it was loneliness and address it head on, if you will. It's almost like you had to do the crab walk sideways, yeah, work on these other things.
Or I think of it as, you know, if loneliness is this plate that I'm trying to smash, but I didn't have the energy to just slam it down and smash it. So I had to chip away at all these other little things before I could get to break into the loneliness. So, you know, I had to chip away at strengthening my body by going for a 10-minute walk. You know, I had to chip away at dealing with being depressed, or all of these other little elements, because I didn't have it in me to handle that big issue. And I think that's okay. You know, if you do have it in you to handle whatever's big is going on in your life, that's great. But we don't always have that. But if we can make progress in other little areas, other angles, and sometimes that will indirectly give you what you need to handle the bigger thing.
Yeah, but when you just described that, what I was thinking of was loneliness is the top of the pyramid, and conquering, getting to the top of the pyramid is just impossible without addressing all of these little things down here, because you don't have the strength to transcend the pyramid. And instead, if you can chip away at the bottom, or take one step at a time, whichever way you want to look at it. So either the loneliness comes down because we're chipping away, right? Or we climb up, and then we have now, because we've done all that work below, maybe we have the tools to deal with it when we get, then we will have the tools actually to deal with it when we get there. But heading out the gate right at it is virtually impossible, I would think.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way to think of it, is of those little steps that you take along the way. And I think that's kind of comforting to know that you don't have to take this massive leap right off the bat and deal with, you know, the big thing. You can just take little steps, and that might even be the better way to do it. Mm-hmm. I like that. That feels comforting to me.
Oh, now, I mean, you are an author and an editor. I mean, everything books. I'm thinking there's already inside of you, part of you is already an introvert. And so am I right in that, or no? Are you like one of those really extroverted writers?
It's interesting. I used to be very, very, very extroverted. I was always the loudest one in the bar, the center of the party. And I still like that part of me very much. But when I did get sick, I became more introverted over the years. And I think today I'm more balanced, which I think really helps me with a lot of my clients, because as a book coach and editor, I work with a lot of writers. Writers do generally tend to lean more introverted. So I think I have this good balance where I can meet the introverted energy and not, you know, scare away anyone who is super introverted, but I've got that bit of that extroversion where I can pull things out of people and kind of move them maybe a little bit out of their comfort zone, but not in too much of a scary way. So I think I've got a good balance for working with a lot of introverted people, because you're right, that does tend to be the author stereotype.
Yeah. I guess that was a bias showing up for me right there in that question.
That's all right.
I will admit it. But sometimes that's why I have to check it. Like, is this? And I think also that it's helpful to check it. Am I on the right track? How am I doing in making this judgment? Is this judgment even one that makes sense? You know, and I think sometimes when we go on those journeys, figuring that out, like, well, is this loneliness and can I address it now or do I need to chip away? You know, am I an extrovert or am I an introvert? Maybe right now I need to be an introvert. I don't know. Maybe that just shift is lonely because I'm the only one who can make that shift, but that's what's happening in my life. You know, there's just so much out there that happens inside of us that we don't really talk about.
And you're right, there's so much power in questioning things, just putting that question out, and maybe something comes of it and maybe it doesn't, but you're giving yourself the opportunity to see things.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so your injury, because I really do want to get to what happened, because I want to hear your struggle. So it was in 2013 that you had a minor medical procedure. I mean, yeah. How minor are we talking about?
Just in the doctor's office, in the family doctor's office, no big deal. And they said to me, you can expect to have about 2 weeks of pain, discomfort, pretty minor. We're not even going to prescribe you any painkillers. You know, you can just take over-the-counter painkillers for a couple of weeks. If you need them, you'll probably be fine. And they did the procedure and there was a lot of bleeding and a lot of this, you know, when the doctor's brow gets really furrowed and yes, no, everything's fine, but you can see they're really concentrating hard. And but that was fine. And I went back home and took my painkillers for a couple of weeks and then a couple more weeks. And I thought, you know, this isn't getting, I'm hurting. I have pain. This isn't going away. And after about 4 weeks, I went back to the doctor and she said, oh, that's weird. Yeah, maybe here's a couple of prescription painkillers. And the long story short is that the pain just never went away. And doctors, you know, have a lot still to discover about pain and chronic pain. But essentially, they think that during the procedure, there was some nerve damage that occurred, which basically meant that the nerves in my body were sending pain signals to the brain saying something's going wrong here. You know, we need to be in pain, when in fact nothing was going wrong and my body had healed properly, but the nerves were freaking out because they had had that damage and they were still sending pain signals. So although there was nothing actually wrong with my body, I was experiencing pain and it didn't go away and it didn't go away and it didn't go away. And in the end, the doctors gave me the title of chronic pain, which is kind of a bullshit title because it just means pain that doesn't stop. It's not, you know, an actual diagnosis or a cause, but you basically have to learn to manage those pain signals and manage your body through the pain. At least that's what the situation was for me. And I ended up, pain is interesting because chronic pain wears you down in a way that acute pain doesn't. So we all know what it feels like to have a headache or to, you know, break your arm or to get a burn and you have pain and that sucks. But when you have it ongoing and it doesn't let up, it really wears you down in a really destructive way. And in the end, between the doctor's appointments and the pain itself and other various thing appointments and so on, I ended up going on sick leave from work and trying all sorts of different medications and treatments. And the doctors just kept upping the opioid painkillers, which caused their own problems as well. Mm-hmm. And I eventually was admitted to the Calgary Chronic Pain Center, where they did cognitive behavioral therapy and occupational therapy and yoga, and you met every day with different types of doctors to deal with different elements, and it's really intensive treatment. I got accepted into a trial medication program, and eventually I started to get a better handle on the pain. I started to figure out how to work with my body so that If I was feeling good, I wouldn't overdo it. If I was feeling bad, I wouldn't curl up into a ball and cry, but I'd still manage to do some things. And I learned how to live with the pain and then do a few things to reduce the pain as well. Mm-hmm. And I eventually got to a point where my brain was starting to come back to life a little bit. I was kind of out of that immediate survival mode and coming back to life a little bit and wondering what to do with myself. And I wasn't well enough to go back to work. I used to work as an events manager. Very kind of physical work, mentally intensive work. Couldn't do it. I just wasn't reliable enough. But I wanted to do something and I started to help others, right? And that was in 2016. I started to get to the point where I was well enough to think about, to feel bored at home, basically, and to think about what to do with myself next. And I started to write and I started to do those books and start my business. And now here we are in 2022 as we record. And like you said earlier, I've written 16 books. I have book coaching clients. I teach writing lessons and classes. I still don't work full time. I probably do about half the hours I used to before I got sick, but I'm able to have a full time, you know, full business that I love, that makes me feel good, that gives me the freedom to take time off when I am sick and when I need a nap or a doctor's appointment or whatever. And I've kind of rebuilt this new life on the other side as an entrepreneur, running my own time and my business and my health in ways that I never imagined possible. It was a bit of a slog to get here, but it's a totally different world to the one that I left before I got sick.
Yeah, and it sounds what you were describing about the high highs and the low lows, like yes, that you would experience with chronic pain and how you came out of that. It makes me think of the word pacing, and that's what I call it anyway in my world, is learning what I can do and knowing that it is enough. But it is really hard, I think, in the work world to, I don't think there's room inside of corporations and things like that for people to figure out how to pace.
Yeah,
it's frustrating and it's disappointing too, because I just wonder, I mean, what great things could, look at all the great things you can do. I mean, what would happen if there was some support in the work world behind that? And I know, you know, I try to think of like employers, like what would an employer do? Okay, they've got someone who's injured. Okay, that's already frustrating because they can't get, you know, now X, Y, and Z is not going to get done. And how an employer might be okay with that, right? And that's something you've had to learn. So if that's something you've had to learn in your new career, if you will, yeah, entrepreneurship, new career. Yeah. How do you cope with that when it's just you? And let's say a client calls or you have an appointment, but you overdid it somehow and you need to take that break. What happens inside of you and how do you deal with that?
That's a really good question, because a lot of the elements that come into play when you're an employee still exist when you're running your own show. You know, you want to do a good job. You feel guilty when you can't show up the way you want to. Well, I shouldn't say you. I'll speak from my own experience. I feel guilty when I can't be there the way I want to be. And sometimes I feel resentful of the illness. I feel resentful of, you know, this thing that happened to me. And it can be easy to slip into that kind of victim mentality where you feel like these things are happening to you and you don't have control over your life, your energy, your pain, or what have you. And it's really interesting because I work with a lot of people who come to work with me. They've been through some kind of trauma in their life. And now they're at a point where they've done a lot of work to kind of try and heal, or maybe heal is too strong a word, but to come back from it, to understand it, to move on. And now they want to share their insights with someone else. And people always say to me, if I could help one person who's going through what I experienced, it would all be worth it. So I have a lot of shared ground with my clients in that way, because I have that feeling where I want to help other people who have gone through some kind of big thing in their life, a trauma, you know, big trauma or a little trauma, or some kind of disruption or something that happened to them where they did feel like the victim. And now they want to help others. So we have that shared common ground. So it's really nice in that, you know, I get to choose my own people I work with, and I've chosen to work with people who share that feeling of wanting to almost kind of pass the baton and help others. So I am able to say, you know what, I need an extra few days, let's reschedule. And they can say the same to me too. And, you know, you obviously want to keep your boundaries and make sure you're showing up as much as you can, but there's a whole different vibe to when I was working in corporate, at least. And I know that's not true of every corporation, but when you get to set the terms and the vibe of your own work and your own, you know, I find I naturally attract people to work with me who are on the same wavelength, because they like the way that I show up and the way that I teach writing and the way that I talk about writing. So it becomes a non-issue, really. You kind of end up creating this world for yourself where it's not an issue anymore. And that's really amazing. And it's not something you can always find if you're not creating your own world. I think this is why I end up working with a lot of people who they might be starting a coaching business, or they might have gone back to school to learn to be a therapist, or perhaps they took a yoga teacher training course. And now they want to build something for themselves based on whatever it is that they've been through and come out the other end of. They're now looking, what can I do with that? How can I use that to inform my world going forward and to do something positive with my world going forward? And so, yeah, a lot of people that I work with are starting their own businesses in various different ways, and sharing their story is part of that.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like what you're telling me is that you're able to be more gentle with yourself, and because you've created this, I almost want to say support group of, but it's not like you've surrounded yourself with people who understand and know that you don't want to let them down. And because of that, then maybe you have some mutually agreed upon expectations that this will get done. It just might not always look exactly the same as it did before, I guess, yeah, in how you show up.
I think that's spot on. And it's interesting when you talk about, I hadn't thought of it as creating your own support group, but it kind of is in a way. As you know, the professional writer, the coach, I'm there to support my clients, but in many ways they do support me back, because we are all trying to do this thing where you want to pay it forward. You want to add something positive to the world. You want to put something out into the world that outlives you. You want to help others who are going through what you've been through. And we all kind of have that common ground. So we do end up being supportive of each other and being gentle with each other, like you said, and having that little give that comes from knowing that you're amongst your people, your tribe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think that's beautiful. And I'm, again, I know this isn't it. I know I'm kind of off topic a little bit, but I'm still trying to figure out how employers could really benefit from working with people who have disabilities or chronic illnesses like what you have. Because I think at this point in time, it's almost like if one has to go out and be an entrepreneur, if they've got a chronic pain or a disability that is unpredictable and things like that. And I'm wondering how much employers are missing out on, like how much is being missed out on because someone is different than the rest, you know, like that. That almost just reminded me of Sesame Street, you know, what's it?
There is definitely this wealth of talent and experience that gets missed out on when employers able to support, you know, people with disabilities or people who show up differently to the rest of the workplace. And it's so tricky. I know for me, it was absolutely true that I couldn't have done my job with my health the way it was. And I had never thought or considered entrepreneurship. I thought it sounded too hard, actually. Took too much work. And it wasn't until circumstances pushed me into it that it ended up, that I took that route, and it ended up being the best thing I could have done. But for people who are dealing with employers, I think the real struggle comes because we can't expect others to understand what we're going through just off the bat. I mean, it would be nice, but it's just not realistic. They just can't if they haven't been there, right? So unfortunately, then the onus comes on us to help them understand, which is a really lousy position to be in when you're already dealing with being sick and now you have to explain it to others. And I know at the beginning, I really didn't have the language to talk about it. I was in a state of constant panic, you know, that fight or flight response. I didn't know what words to use. The doctors didn't know how to diagnose me, so I didn't know how to tell anyone else about what was going on. I was also a bit embarrassed to talk about it because I felt like I was failing at work. So I didn't do a good job of talking to my employer about it. And there was a time when I would beat up on myself for that and say, you should have done better. But now I can see that I couldn't have done better. And it's not a judgment on me that I didn't do a better job of it because I wasn't able to at the time. And that's okay. But I think, you know, if we are able to talk to others about what we're experiencing, then we can help them understand and accommodate and do what's needed for us to be able to show up and still, you know, make ourselves proud of doing a good job, you know, do a good, like a legit good job as an employer, you know, regardless of your ability status. It just kind of sucks that the onus is on us to kind of share that with other people, but it's hard for others to understand when they really don't know what's going on. So yeah. I think it's important to sit with it and try and figure out, is there a way I can talk about this? How could I do that? What am I able to do right now? And if you're not able to do it, that's okay, because you've probably got enough on your plate as it is.
Yeah, so, because I'm thinking one of the things you said was, you know, with chronic pain is that panic mode. You were almost in panic. And that makes me think of, well, all this is great and dandy. Yes, we want to talk about it. Yes, we want to share. At the beginning, I think when things are rapidly changing or have already rapidly changed and, you know, living day-to-day life gets really hard, that in panic mode, thinking becomes a problem.
It does.
Decision-making too, right?
Yeah, and that's shown in research as well, that your cognitive processing abilities diminish when you're under stress. And, you know, when you're in getting a new diagnosis or things are weird and you don't know what's going on, it's stress, right? And so literally your brain isn't working as well. So you can't expect too much of yourself. You're absolutely right. So there's this real kind of balancing act of finding compassion for yourself for where you're at in the moment and trying to figure things out. But I think in my experience, there came a kind of tipping point where I went from being in that immediate, fast panic mode to this kind of realization that, all right, so this isn't just a short-term thing. This is going on a bit longer now. I still don't have it figured out, but I can start to think about things more broadly now. And it was shifting. And I think that's important to note. There was a shifting where things moved from that immediate panic to thinking about how can I move on or what can I do now? And I like remembering that because it reminds me that things aren't static. Things aren't always the same. When things are bad, doesn't mean they're going to stay that bad. And I really appreciate remembering, you know, looking back, talking to you and remembering, looking back on that panic time and seeing the shifts that have come. And because when I was there, it felt so dark and that it wouldn't change. And, you know, doctors were using words like chronic and lifetime and long-term. And these are really scary words that make you think that things will never change. And perhaps you will never, you know, get better. But it doesn't mean that things are always going to be exactly the same. And, you know, I'm reminded of that every day in my work as well, when people are writing about the traumas and the things that they've been through, and they're able to write about it because things didn't stay the same. They were able to move on and see some light and find some perspective and have something now to share and to say about that. So I think that's a really beautiful thing to know, that even if you're in that moment right now, it's not going to be like that forever.
Yeah, and that is one of the hardest things to remember, I think, right? That we are changing, that we can change. And something you said, there's a parable out there, and I'm going to butcher it a little bit, but I think it was a king who, you know, experienced really great times and then experienced really bad times. And, you know, so the roller coaster effect, right, that you were talking about, even with the pain too, right? There was this roller coaster effect with pains, that real high highs and the very low lows. And so anyway, the king had, I don't remember who made it, but someone made something, I think it was a ring that he could wear that said, "This too shall pass," so that in the high highs and in the low lows, he could remember things were going to change and that it was going to be okay.
Yes, I've heard that phrase, "This too shall pass." I didn't know where it came from.
I love the story. I do. And it's, but I think also with pacing and with all of that inner work that it sounds like you've done, like, those high highs and those low lows don't maybe get as high or as low, or maybe the highs still get high and they're super exciting, but the lows don't get so low. So it's more of even, well, let me just say, like, sailing, it's a peaceful day on the seas instead of a raging storm.
Yeah, definitely. There is that sense of calm, and you still feel all the things, and you have good days and you have bad days, but the bad days are not the end of the world anymore, where they did used to be. And the good days don't have that frantic energy about them. There's more of a sense of calmness around them. And it's because they don't feel so scarce, I think, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel so fleeting, or like, I must grab hold of every good thing about this day and not let go. And I must remember every moment, and I must take all the pictures, and I can't forget my son's smile. It's not that panicky kind of strangled energy around the good times either.
Yeah, I had not thought about it that way. I'm so glad you brought that up, because maybe that's why in those good moments, it would be so easy to overdo it and then crash. Because if I don't hold on to this, then I'm never going to have it again. And then, of course, we prove ourselves right by overdoing it and crashing the next day, right?
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah.
So true. Okay, so if someone is experiencing what you went through, maybe they're at the beginning of their journey, what are three tips or tools that you say, maybe try this?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this because I knew you were going to ask me. And I think my tips and tools, I want to pose three questions, actually.
Oh, I like this. How exciting. Three questions instead of tips, which might just be tips after all. Yay.
Three questions, because one thing that I did find going through this journey that we haven't really touched on, but I found myself angry a lot of the time, or frustrated, or had all these really negative feelings coming up because it was, you know, a negative situation. You know, it's no surprise. And I see this with my clients all the time as well, regardless of what kind of trauma they've been through, whether it's, you know, health, a betrayal, or, you know, abuse, or family messed up, or the business going under, you know, whatever it is, I see the same things coming up again and again. And you have all these negative feelings. So my first question is, what's behind those negative feelings? Maybe you just feel bad or angry or frustrated, but I would encourage people to go a step deeper and say, what's behind that? And for me, it was really a feeling of betrayal, like betrayal by my body. I felt betrayed by my body. I felt blindsided and let down. And, you know, there might be more than one thing. You might have a whole list of words, but I'd encourage someone to get specific with those words and try and find those more specific words, like blindsided instead of just bad, you know, try and get more specific, because then you can see what it is about that situation that's really getting to you, that's really the gut punch. And that understanding helps you move on. So that would be question number one. What's really behind how you're feeling? And question number two would be, what would you tell someone else about that? Like, what do you really want people to know about it? Like, if it's betrayed, what do you want someone to know about why betrayal is so bad? Or, you know, what if you could have a private conversation with someone and just let rip, what would you say? So question number two would be, what do you really want people to know about what you're feeling? And then the third question, you can't get to without looking at the other two, but this has been the most powerful one for me, because for a long time I knew I felt angry and betrayed and blindsided and all the rest of it. And I knew what I would, you know, tell other people who were getting this kind of diagnosis specifically or what have you. But I didn't really know what to do about it. I had all these feelings and I knew what they were, but I didn't know what, I was just sitting and stewing in them and feeling them and being miserable with them. And I didn't know where to go from there. So my third question is, how would you tell people about this? So you know how you're feeling, you know what you want to say. How do you want to talk to people about this? If you do, perhaps you don't, and that's okay too. But maybe you want to sit down and have a cup of coffee in a dark corner of a cafe with someone and whisper some things. Or maybe you want to stand up on the TED Talk stage and give a big presentation to the whole world. Or maybe, you know, like the people I work with, you want to write a book. You want to sit in a quiet room on your own with your own thoughts and feelings and pass something on to someone else by writing it into a book. Or maybe you just want to tell your kids while you're walking around the grocery store what it's really been like for you. How do you want to talk about it? So what's really behind what you're feeling and identifying that? And then what do you really want to say about it? And how do you want to talk about it? Those are the three questions I would put to someone.
Those are great questions, and great questions for just starting the inquiry process. And I think part of the journey, at least for me, is getting to that point where I could even ask any question, you know, once the pain let up.
And I think you do have to kind of sometimes push yourself into that point, because it is easy to stay in whatever mode you're in, whether it's the panic mode or the feeling sorry for yourself mode, or, you know, whatever it is. This is why I love questions, because they nudge you forward a little bit. They just a little gentle push into something else other than the stage you're currently at, because there is so much more available wherever you're at in life. If you keep nudging forward a little bit, there's so much more available to you.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much, Liz Green, which you can find at greengoosewriting.com. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks, Angela. Me too.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Relatively Damaged by Damaged Parents. We really enjoyed talking to Liz about how she learned to really live with chronic pain. We especially liked when she spoke about her unexpected success journey as an entrepreneur. To unite with other damaged people, connect with us on Instagram. Look for Damaged Parents. We'll be here next week, still relatively damaged. See you then.